The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Just when Dongshan was about to leave Yunyan, he said, "If in the future someone happens to ask whether I can describe the Master's truth or not, how should I answer them?" After a long pause, Yunyan said, "Just this is it." Dongshan sighed. Then Yunyan said, "Worthy Liang, now that you have taken on this great affair, you must consider it carefully." Dongshan continued to experience doubt. Later, as he crossed a stream, he saw his reflection in the water and was awakened to Yunyan's meaning. He then composed this verse, "Avoid seeking elsewhere, for that's far from the self. Now I travel alone. Everywhere I meet it. Now it's exactly me. Now I'm not it. It must thus be understood to merge with thusness." So we've been exploring this part of the record of Dongshan for many days now. We've been sitting and walking and eating and sleeping for many days now together, as we say, alone together. We've been commenting on how rare an opportunity this is to come together for an in-person sesshin, come together for a sesshin that allows us to be intimate with each other while also providing us some boundaries and protection so that we can dive down into the inner work that is at the heart of this practice. To really see through the dearly beloved self, the dearly beloved narratives of the self, which sometimes are pretty nice, but most times are built from little building blocks from our childhood, our adolescence, all of the years we've been alive on the planet, into sometimes very harsh, accusatory inner narratives about the self. And we've been talking about this quite a lot because it's so essential. The great revolution of Hinduism that is represented by the Buddha's teaching was that there is no great self. There is, in fact, no abiding self. Or we could look at it that there are no selves that abide. Because when we sit here day after day, hour after hour, minute after minute, actually, from moment to moment, we see the arising of all these selves, and we wonder, what is this person that I call by the name that I use to refer to myself? What is this conglomeration of impulses and stories and narratives and blame and shame and anger and resentment and sadness, sorrow, grief, fear, terror? And what is it that also tastes the delights of this world? The delights of the sunlight coming into the zendo. We didn't make that happen. It comes in and shares itself with us without an agenda. Before Dongshan went to meet Yunyan, the last teacher he had visited was Guishan, and we've told you some about his pilgrimage that culminated in this event that's celebrated in this little story about him being with Yunyan and not quite getting the "just this is it" teaching until, depending on the translation, he waded across a stream and saw something, or in this translation, he crossed over a stream and saw his reflection in the water. It almost doesn't matter, because the main thing is that he saw something. And it's interesting to me that all the different translations talk about him looking down, looking down, looking deep, looking to something that was no longer his own heart, mind, and all the selves arising and falling away, but something offered by the river, the stream, a complete offering to Dongshan, and he received it. And I've been telling you about, or at least talked about a little bit yesterday, this practice that arose in China of the Huado, or we call it in Japanese Wato, this seed kernel of everything that we hear as narrative, the pointing out word. And so you can do this, all of us can do this with any of these Zen stories we hear, or poems, something every once in a while, some combination of words strikes us, a simple phrase. And then if we want to do Wado practice on our own, we can just keep that little phrase, those few words, or in the case of Mu, that one word, with us, as Wu Men says, day and night. So the past few days of this sesshin, I've been keeping this one phrase from Dongshan's poem in my heart. Everywhere I meet it. Everywhere I meet it. I don't know what the it is exactly. To try to put words on it would maybe be a little bit too limiting. But of course, just this is it, is what Yunyan said to him, and that became his own teaching, more or less, developing this quality of thusness, of suchness. And it's important to know that before Dongshan came to Yunyan, he too was obsessed with a Wado, a personal Wado, that came from a koan, a story that he had heard, a teaching, which is deeply rooted in another revolution, the second revolution after the Buddha, was the Mahayana revolution. And when that began developing in India and some of its adherents came to China, the Mahayana was deeply influenced by Taoist teachings about everything that we encounter, the trees, the flowers, the bushes, being teachers, this wonderful presence in our lives of the natural world. And the Taoist sages who wandered around the mountains finding the teachings not in some books or in some texts or stories, but right there in a tree or the sun filtering through the tree. And this came to profoundly influence Zen. Many of the Buddhist schools before Zen really got going in China began to notice that the natural world was offering itself as a teacher, that there were ways to encounter the world directly that didn't have any intermediaries. The just this is it of Yunyan was a product of actually centuries of this kind of investigation. What is this world? What am I doing here? How is it that I, as a human being, am supported by everything I encounter? So one of the teachings became, everything I encounter is the self. And by the time Dongshan was around, this was a pretty established teaching in the Zen school. But he had heard a story about the national teacher, a teacher from at least 100 years before he was alive, maybe more, who had been asked a question. And I just want to read you a little bit of that koan. It's a very long koan, so I'm just going to read you enough so you get the gist of what's going on here. A monk asked the national teacher, "What is the mind of the ancient Buddhas?" What is the mind of the ancient Buddhas? And the national teacher said, a wall tile. The monk said, a wall tile? Isn't a wall tile inanimate? The national teacher said, yes. The monk asked, and it can expound the Dharma? The national teacher said, it expounds it brilliantly without let up. And so this was the deep question that Dongshan was carrying around. How can inanimate beings expound the Dharma? How is this possible? I get it that trees and grasses and rivers can expound it, but maybe stones? Yeah, but wall tiles? Something made by another human being? Something that's laid on the wall? We might say the floorboards? How can they teach without let up? How can they actually show us the way? A lot of effort of Dongshan when he first met Guishan went into exploring this. At one point, Guishan held up his whisk, the ceremonial whisk, which is a horsehair tail on a stick, and that was originally for getting rid of mosquitoes and flies, but it became symbolic because it was the thing that was hanging around. Just like in Doksan, the thing that's hanging around is our kotsu, our teaching stick. And so sometimes people use it to express things in their koan presentations. So Guishan held up his whisk, and he said, do you understand? Because there was the hosu, the whisk, teaching the Dharma unceasingly. And Guishan used what was available. He could have picked up a stick or a stone. He could have picked up anything. And he said to Dongshan, do you understand? And Dongshan said, no, I don't. And then he gave him some teachings which Dongshan just didn't understand at all. And that was when Guishan said, you know what? I think you need to sit with another teacher. You need to be with someone who can help you explain this, because I am not an inanimate being. And so I use words to teach. So I can only point to this. But this other teacher, and we've talked about this earlier, his wonderful description of Yunyan as being teaching like the grass and the wind. And if you can bear that kind of teaching, then you'll be able to hold him in some esteem, to be able to hear his words. And of course, the wonderful thing about these teachers, without Guishan and Yunyan being in touch, I'm sure, because as Taigen Dan Leighton notes in his wonderful book about Dongshan, there was no email back then or text capacity, so they couldn't communicate with each other. Guishan just sent Dongshan on to Yunyan. And when he got to Yunyan, he expressed this deep, abiding question that he had, his own wado, his own obsession, really, because in a way, a wado is kind of a useful way of having an obsessive thought. You might say mu is like that, too. We really are asking you, instead of obsessing about all the things you feel you did wrong in the past or all the things you are afraid are going to happen in the future, to obsess about mu, and in this case, to obsess about this question, how can inanimate beings preach the Dharma? And so you may imagine that Yunyan came up with some brilliant thing that would wake up his new student. And the brilliant thing was that he picked up his whisk, his hosu, and held it up and said, do you understand? Now, sometimes when we receive the same teachings from two different teachers, it still doesn't get through. Sometimes I feel that I say the same things over and over and over again until a moment comes when you understand for yourself, and then the words have some meaning. So a lot of Zen teaching using words is planting seeds. Planting seeds that will later blossom, A lot of our chanting in the liturgy book is planting seeds. Every once in a while, one hits home. A phrase hits home. And this didn't quite happen with Dongshan, with Guishan, or with Yunyan. It didn't really happen for him until he crossed that stream and saw something. You might say that the stream itself was the inanimate object. This became such an important part of his teaching and such an important part of the Soto school, the teachings of inanimate beings. And Yunyan says to him, when Dongshan challenges him, he's still not understanding, so he says, well, where is it written about this? Are there any sutras about this? It just doesn't make sense to me. And Yunyan quotes to him from the Amitabha Sutra, where it says, the lakes and rivers, the birds, the forests, they all chant Buddha. They all chant Dharma. Some of us have been talking in officers' meetings and the teachers' meetings about the amazing Om Nam chant that we did for a few days. And David mentioned how there's a resonance in this room. Someone else is singing in here. That it isn't any of us human beings. That isn't any of us animate beings. It's something else. We say, as David said yesterday, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas rise from the cracks in the earth. They're surrounding us. And so many indigenous cultures, and some of this has been lost in Judeo-Christian culture, there is an animism that is an animated quality to everything. I remember when I first started teaching, and we used to teach in Boundless Way at a little rundown house that makes this place look like a palace in northern Connecticut called Senexit House, that one of my students, who stayed a student for many years until he died, was really also obsessed with this question. How can it be that inanimate beings preach the Dharma? I can't hear it. I don't understand it. And at Senexit House, we had Doksan in a little room, and we had people line up in a row on zabutons, and at the front, which was our old style of doing this, we had a bell, and when the teacher rang their bell, the next student in line would ring a bell in response. We may get back to that at some point. And the place where the waiting area was, these cushions, was next to an amazing fireplace. These old polished stones that had been put together into a fireplace. Very old house this was. And the floor was tiled. It was a little uncomfortable to sit on a zabuton on this floor. But anyway, this particular student, when he heard me ring the bell for a person who was in front of him, who rang their bell in response, suddenly saw the tiles and the stones of the fireplace teaching him. It was one of those sudden moments that was built on years and years of gradual wondering. And it was beyond words, and I couldn't believe this person. He came in, he did his bows, he sat down, he said, my name is so-and-so and my practice is such-and-such, and then he looked at me and he said, the stones, the tiles, I've never forgotten it. He heard the teachings of the inanimate beings for himself, not because he'd read about it. And just like Dongshan saw something in the river, maybe he saw his reflection, maybe he saw something else, maybe he saw stones, maybe he saw the water running across the stones. Dogen talks about this same thing in some of his teachings, and of course he was in the school of Dongshan, in the Soto school, the Cao Dong school, this school where we value everything as a teacher. And in Bendawa, which is the Wholehearted Way, one of his longer texts about how to practice Zen, which we have a little excerpt from in our sutra book, he says, grasses and trees, fences and walls demonstrate and exalt this wondrous Dharma for the sake of living beings, both ordinary sage, and in turn, living beings, both ordinary and sage, express and unfold it for the sake of grasses and trees, fences and walls. This is entirely reciprocal. What happens when we practice Zazen is that the energy of awakening that we call bodhicitta that arises in us, the qi that's part of the qigong, this is something turning the planet around. It's pumping our heart and making our blood circulate. It's in charge of our breathing. Once we give into allowing our breath to breathe itself in breath practice, we discover this. We don't have to do everything. The world is doing everything for us, every single thing. And we need to repay it through our own waking up to the sayings, the words, the wordless words, the unspoken speech of the pebbles and the tiles and the stones. Everything is truly kindly bent to ease us. And this reciprocal quality means that whatever you're doing in your practice, whether you're lost in some kind of miserable hell realm, or you're clear and appreciating the birds and everything in between, this is your payment back to the world that's been taking care of you from before you were born. Dogen concludes this train of thought, which is only Dogen's train of thought, really. It's a straight line if you really sit with it long enough, but it seems to go all over the place. He says, therefore, always a wonderful word in Dogen after he's said a bunch of things. Okay, so if you put all this together, then it's clear, is what he's saying. And I think even the Japanese word is so. Even if only one person, he's talking about us, even if only one person sits for a short time, because this Zazen imperceptibly accords with all things. It imperceptibly accords with all things, and it fully resonates through all time. Before your mother and father were born, it was resonating. And it will resonate into the future, no matter what happens with this sad, sorry planet. Today in Worcester, the heat index is so high, it might be a little dangerous to walk outside. The air is not fresh today. It has an impact on it because there's the reciprocal quality of us being in the air, feeling the sun, feeling the warmth, and this giving back, of course, it's in-breath and out-breath and in-breath and out-breath, taking in the oxygen, giving out the carbon dioxide. It's all one thing happening. We cannot extricate ourselves from the planet. We never could. There's a lot of science fiction that's written about the possibility of doing that, and who knows, maybe that could happen, leaving a decaying or dead planet for some other wonderful place in the universe. But the reality is, it's here now that we get to practice with the conditions that are present now, even when we don't like them. Our personal pain, the pain of the world. If, as Guishan said to Yunyan, if you can bear, said to Dongshan when he sent him to Yunyan, if you can bear Yunyan's teaching, can you bear not only the gifts of the world, but also its suffering? And can you connect with it from beginningless time through the end of time, which will also never really end, although it may not include us? Is that possible for you to surrender so much to the reality of the way the world actually is, where everything is kindly bent to ease us, even though it doesn't appear in the form we think it should? We have very strong ideas about the way things should be. is it possible? Is it possible to be bodhisattvas, to do this work not for ourselves? Of course, we have to do the inner work to clarify our activity body so that we become the activity body of the Buddha, the Nirmanakaya, going out into the world to cooperate, to resonate with everything that's here. We catch glimpses of it, but then every once in a while, like that student way back, probably 15, 20 years ago, who saw the stones and saw the tiles. You know, he forgot about it a few months later. It didn't transform him completely, but it was a touchstone for the rest of his life. And all I had to do was remind him of it, and he would go, oh, right, click, reset, there it is again. And then we lose it again. Finding and losing. Dogen says, therefore, even if only one person sits for a short time, because this zazen imperceptibly accords with all things and fully resonates through all time, it performs everlasting Buddha guidance within the inexhaustible Dharma. The inexhaustible Dharma. No matter what happens, the Dharma will never exhaust itself, even if the vehicle of human beings who appear to carry it forward are exterminated. The Dharma is not exterminated because it will show up in the ashes and in the stones, in the heat and dust of the future. He says, the inexhaustible Dharma world in the past, present, and future. So this is what Dongshan was looking into for himself 1,000 years ago. More than 1,000 years ago, in China. This is what all the ancestors who followed were looking into. Is it true what they say? Really? And of course you can hear all these words and say, bullshit, 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 because all words are bullshit. They're very clumsy attempts to point to what that student discovered in that moment and then forgot and remembered and forgot and remembered. This is the promise of Zazen. You and the world together come forth in perfect harmony. When Dongshan was about to leave Yunnan, he said, if in the future someone happens to ask whether I can describe the Master's truth or not, how should I answer them? After a long pause, Yunnan said, just this is it. Dongshan sighed. Then Yunnan said, worthy Liang, now that you have taken on this great affair, you must consider it carefully. Dongshan continued to experience doubt. Later, as he crossed a stream, he saw his reflection in the water and was awakened to Yunnan's meaning. He then composed this verse. Avoid seeking elsewhere, for that's far from the self. Now I travel alone. Everywhere I meet it. Now it's exactly me. Now I'm not it. It must thus be understood to merge with thusness. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and people at the end come around. I'll take some comments, reflections, questions. Jenny.
That's really thoughtful. Listen, there's a lot there. I kind of feel like I always saw that inanimate objects teaching, and I never, like, somehow I never heard it from people until I came here and recognized it, and I love it. It's, I mean, I mean, it feels like that in the kitchen sometimes with the pots and the food and the knives, and everything's just kind of singing and everything's, you know, pushing and pushing back and it's harder with people because right. People are so complex, but here at Sashin we kind of simplify people and then just like part of the big dance and yeah. So just a comment, I guess. But.
It's just so right on. I look to see if Alan or David wanted to say something.
Well, I wanted to speak as a former Tenzo, that, you know, something I loved about being a Tenzo and that you exemplified more than I ever did is that then the food that you make becomes that silent teaching for us. You know, it really does. The things that you cook for us, I taste them and the Dharma explodes all through me. And so you have this gift not only for seeing that, you know, and hearing the teaching of the Ascension, but then for delivering it.
Talk about seems to, I don't know, just keep reminding me, I guess. And so, I don't know, I guess I've been thinking about, like, custody of the eyes is kind of like the well and the donkey. Oh. Like, and it happens inside me, too, like, custody of the eyes, to, like, my own thoughts and my own body, and just kind of letting it all just kind of, like, be there, the same way you're letting all of your buddies just be there. And kind of the well is just kind of letting the donkey be there while still being a well, like, you know. And the donkey maybe has thoughts about the well or something, but he's also still just kind of being there, you know. I don't know, I feel like that comes up a lot in a lot of our readings and stuff. And it's like,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, and another way we... talk about custody of the eyes sometimes is minding your own business. Right? And I love you turning that to the internal world too, because all of these thoughts we come along are like our other buddies that are sometimes difficult, and we want to help them or fix them or be kind to them or, you know, let them have it. And this possibility of letting all the beings inside us be, right? And this great gift, and yeah, the donkey may have thoughts about the well, but not a problem, the well is still the well. Well may have thoughts about the donkey. So this great intimacy of letting be, right? Usually we think of intimacy, I have to do something, or you know, the world has to do something, but it's much more intimate than that. Any meddling takes us away from this possibility inside and outside. So yeah, wonderful.
When you know, when you told that koan yesterday, the donkey in the well, I was working with this, you know, teachings of the inanimate beings, and I thought, oh, so I knew this koan pretty well. But that's what the teacher says is missing when, you know, it's like a donkey looking at a well. Well, I would say a little more than that, because this well looking at the donkey is exactly what Dogen and Dongshan and the national teacher were pointing to. And when you see it, you see it. When you hear it, you hear it. Yes. Yeah, you know it. That's right.
And going back to Jenny's point, we've all seen it or heard it, or we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Right? This is not a rational choice to make, to come on Sashin. Right? You have to be slightly touched. For some of us, that's very clear, and some it might not be clear. But we all know this. We've all felt it. And the wonder of Zen is, in a sense, a way into it, a way to appreciate it and expand it. Yeah, so how do we do this, you know, in daily life? How do we do it when we're talking to complex and wonderful and challenging people within us and outside of us too. Thank you.
Just really quick, a moment of appreciation for Dongshan's sigh when asked a question, and then there's the long pause and the answer, just this is it. And I just really felt that, like, oh, all right, yeah, just this is it. Okay, great, I'm not going to get an answer to my question. Sigh, go on my way. No, more to add, just the first time you read it, you know, Dongshan sigh, I really, like, felt that. So
yeah.
That's all, just appreciation for the sigh.
Well, you know, it's again, this wonderful thing about translation, because in the other version, it says, I think he started thinking.
Lost in thought.
He was lost in thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also prefer the sigh. It just, who knows what the original Chinese word, well, somebody knows what the original Chinese word, not me. But yeah, there is that, you know, what kind of a sigh is it? Is he on the verge of understanding something? Is he just like, oh, not again? I just don't get it. This always happens to me. You know, next you're going to show me a whisk. Yeah. But you have to authentically sigh. You have to, because that's another kind of a pause, isn't it? Thank you. Yeah.
So. Teaching of inanimate objects or animate, non-human beings, and that, and just taking real comfort in this idea that, you know, we talk about doing zazen, but also sometimes I've heard it said that zazen does us. And so I found that to be very true in this teaching of the wordless teaching. And if I'm trying, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to hear the teaching of the four, okay. It's never happened that way. But it has happened. And it's when zazen is doing me, and it just, the teaching arises. And such delight. So grateful for the practice.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you for sharing that experience. Go ahead.
There's an anecdote about Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, you know, whose Zen mind, beginner's mind, introduced a lot of us to Zen. And this is in a book of anecdotes, and one of his students, early students, just cannot get to 10 in doing breath training, which is how you always started at San Francisco Zen Center. And one day she goes into Doksan and she's all excited, and she finally can go 1 to 10, 1 to 10, 1 to 10. She says, you know, I'm finally doing Zazen. And he says, no, never say that. Zazen is doing Zazen. And, you know, so that's a third way to think of it. And it's a little bit, you know, it's related to what Don was saying about getting the, you know, custody of the eyes, getting the watcher out of the way. And so that's something to try sometime, is sit and let Zazen do Zazen. It for me, it relieves a lot of my anxiety about whether I'm doing it right.
Well, and then there's another way to look at it, too, that doesn't invalidate what either of you said. But there's something to be said for that, I'm going to do it right, I'm going to get to 10, I'm going to do it. Because my experience is that when I fully do that, even though it's diluted, and I've done this, especially in the early years, there's a wearing away of that, you know, and then, and so my experience is almost like what you showed us, Todd, physically, the and then there's a kind of dropping away. So who's to say without that big effort and the woman counting to 10 and how wonderful, that it's all part of the mix, I guess, that everything we do or don't do in Zen is part of this great fabric of awakening. And it's hard to know. So the thing is, if you strategize, that's, you gotta run through, David said that the other day, I think, just run through all your strategies. Do them full out. You know, they're not gonna work, but they're gonna do something. You're used to them, so why not just try that? And try. Whenever you hear the word try, you wanna be wary a little. But do it, you know? Do it. And then, oh, huh, what do you know? And then you'll come up with another strategy because you'll think that the strategy of not having a strategy will be the, right? And it's endless. This is why I think Suzuki Roshi said, when she said,
I'm finally doing Zazen.
I'm finally doing Zazen. That's the mistake. When he said, no, that was the response. There's no finally doing Zazen.
Reminds me, I have a 14-month-old grandson, and he has this incredible curiosity about the world. And yet the adults around him want to teach him a name for everything. That's that, say it, you know? I realize that we want to have him use a word to describe something. And it just becomes just the relationship just goes one way without having the opportunity for him to have things present themselves to him in an intimate way without having a name or, to go with it. And I find that that's oftentimes what happens with experience, at least for myself, is the quickly wanting to describe it, to name it, to be able to articulate it, to capture it in some way, rather than just let it be, you know, and let it do its things without having for me to interfere with it.
And I think of channeling our internal grandfather. Wouldn't you love to have Ray for your grandfather? The grandfather who knows it's all interaction, it's all wonderful. And we have that, and that's the kindness you were speaking of last night, the kindness of not having to chart the course and describe, and you know, but this participating in the vastness, both directions, as you said so beautifully.
And you know, the funny thing is, I totally understand what you mean, you know, that the limitations of language start really early with raising a child. And if they didn't arise, the child would be left at a big disadvantage, right? We'd have to develop this ego and this sense of self, and otherwise we can't keep going in our life, you know. But there's always, I think, there's always the thread of the pre-verbal in all of us, but it usually gets buried, especially those of us who really get good at using language. And this practice is a rediscovery, not of being an infant, you know, one of the texts that we chant, a baby babbles, is anything said or not, right? That there's some way that we already, like what David said, we already know this, but the knowing is pre-verbal. And when you actually come around and kind of clear all the clutter away, and there's the floor, and you don't have to use the word floor as an intermediary anymore. It's just then something clicks. And there are some children who are at quite a disadvantage because their parents don't do what your kids are doing. That they fall behind in everything. That, so somehow this verbal thing has to develop, but then it has to be seen through as not the only thing, right? So it's very complicated in that sense. Just being a human being, I don't know, sometimes I just want to give up. It's so complicated. And,
what? Please finish. Sorry, I thought you were done.
Oh, I mean, and of course, we can only encounter the Dharma through this human body. It's kind of amazing.
I just wanted to add briefly, Ray, that I also like the way that the kids push back sometimes. Yeah. When my daughter was that age, she had a bunny she loved that she called Mang Mang. And then when she discovered cherry tomatoes, she loved those, and so they were also Mang Mang. And when we do that as adults, we call it poetry.
Very nice. Yeah, Meredith.
A couple of things. First, back on the first Taisho, the comment was made of whether we could imagine women in the roles of this Taisho. And so I've been doing that all week. I have cast Helen Mirren as Yunyan. and after some deliberation, for the role of Dongshan, I have Lily Tomlin.
Young Lily Tomlin.
And particularly today's translation with the sigh. Mm-hmm. I can see her doing that sigh. And the other thing is I'm reminded of the first precept about not killing and how in some expositions, Thich Nhat Hanh's for instance, it's like, don't kill animals, plants, or minerals. And the minerals part is often like, how would you kill or not kill a mineral? And it seems to me that we have a pretty good answer to that today. In if you are seeing, hearing, receiving the teaching of the inanimate thing, then that's how you respect its life, the life, as it were, of the unliving.
Yeah. So there's some way that this is right in line with the relationality of all of it, right? That that when you're with the thing or with another person too, I think that may be an Amazon delivery. Yeah, we hope. We're expecting some cool things for tomorrow. Don't get your hopes up. They're just plastic containers. But, you know, at this point, everything's
party hats,
right? Yeah. But this relationality, right? So we hear the door open. There's a reverberation in us. There's always this relational quality. And because it's so complicated to be in relationship to anything outside of us, we can just put a wall up that's so impenetrable that nobody can get through it. And part of Zen that's so important is it dissolves the glue. I think Jeannie said this, and she was quoting somebody else earlier, that holds these fragments of self together. They're just fragments. But then when everything's included, it's all us. There's no little me, there's no I, me, mine, there's just this. Just this is it. Then you get some, as Helen Mirren would say. Let's do Michael first then.
I just so appreciate your talk about inanimate objects preaching the Dharma. I sort of understood this from Dogen but I didn't until I moved into the temple.
Mm-hmm.
This building, this everything preaches every day. And the thing is, it requires my love and attention to do so. And that interchange, it's not like it's something that's going to jump and fly off into the sky. It's that I'm here, and it is me. Mm-hmm. And so it's, beyond words, but it does, and it's so real.
Yeah.
Beyond, blindingly obvious.
Well, and I think this mentioning that we have to show up, William James once said, why God requires our cooperation, I have no idea, but he seems to. Right? So these inanimate objects need us. And Dogen says that. We practice for the floor, for the temple, and there is a reciprocal thing that requires something of us. It doesn't require the figuring out, right? It doesn't require what we think it is. Well, I've got to make it happen. No. But we have to show up. And just going back for a second to this, this separation we were talking about, is not a mistake on the part of the universe. Right? Oh, if only that the teaching is being born as a human being, which is separating consciousness with it, is the great gift that allows us then to enter in some astonishing, incomprehensible way. So even the position of feeling separate is part of the great and required, as you were saying, everything required.
And I want to just speak to some more to the child learning language problem, right? But that it creates such a barrier. But it also, I know for myself, for example, that I don't know the names of birds. And there are people who know the names of birds and they'll point them out to me. And suddenly I see the bird. Like, words that are used in the service of pointing out are very different from words that shut down. The same thing with plants. David's gone a little, what's the word I want to use? He's very excited about ferns these days. And do you know, a fern is not a fern. There's thousands of different kinds of ferns. And so we'll be going for a walk in the woods, and I have a little thing on my phone that identifies ferns. And so I do this one, and they're all different. They look the same to me, but they're not. So to use words, I think this is why human beings uniquely can understand the Dharma and experience the Dharma, because we have these pointing out instructions. You know, that's what teaching is sometimes called, pointing out instructions. It's wonderful to get pushed that way, to see what's going on. The other thing that keeps occurring to me, I really like this translation from a guy in San Francisco named Andy Ferguson. We tend to say inanimate objects. And the way this is usually translated is insentient beings or non-sentient beings, that it's beings who are not sensing. But he in his translation puts that together into, I forgot because I filled my head with all the other translations. Inanimate beings. Like, that's really different, right? And it took me a while through planning the talk, was mostly trying to get the phrase inanimate beings into my mouth because it's not what I'm familiar with. But I love it. I feel like it's another pointing out instruction. Yeah, Anne.
Yeah, I always thought the word inanimate is wrong. That what we call it inanimate is animate, but going very, 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 very slowly.
Yes.
I mean, when they try to find the edge between what we call living and not living, it gets really complicated and confused and impossible. So yeah. That tile was once maybe a creature on the floor, putting
yes.
whatever on
yes.
the ocean floor. Mm. So the division just doesn't work. And that's why you have to stare at it for a long time. You can start seeing it move a teeny bit.
Yeah. Is the tile moving or is your mind moving? That's an old Zen koan. But yeah, Dogen talks about mountains walking. And he's pointing to the same thing you already know about that very slow movement. Yeah, well.
I'm still with Todd's effort. and it's more of a kind of comment that, you know, just this isn't it, is also it, right? So the constant emphasis in the koans of doesn't have it, does have it. doesn't, one of them doesn't, the other one does. There is something bogus about that and misleading, right? Because if you're convinced that you don't have it, and everything you try is wrong, the only way out of that is to see that you have had it, actually, that you were mistaken, right? There is no strategy to get out of strategies, except recognizing that the strategies are okay, right?
Yeah.
So there is this, this, in a certain sense, I keep, this is like my big discovery of this session, is that the people who don't have it, have it. You know, that there's something really, really not true about saying you don't have it.
Mm-hmm. Right? But also there's something not true about saying you have it.
Right.
It's all bogus.
It has to be, right? I guess, right, they have to be this equally untrue in a certain way.
Well, and I think this is, you know, we say every moment, everything is here. Right, and so as you, you know, we think, oh, this is not one of those moments, and even thinking, and this is, I think, what you're saying, even thinking this is not one of those moments is one of these moments. And even trying really hard because you think you need something you don't think you have, is fully included. So we say the Buddha of trying really hard. The Buddha of certainty that I am not included. There is room for all the Buddhas, all the selves, all the thoughts, which is kind of good news.
I think I say it because when there's somebody who doesn't get it, my whole mind is like, yeah, that's me. I don't get it.
Right.
And everything I try makes it worse.
Yeah.
My whole mind is on that side.
Yeah.
So to be able to say, wait a minute, you know.
Well, and then to illuminate that place, to be there, to hang out in that stuck place. And we all have that place we go to and that we're so invested in. It's not about fixing that place. Yeah. It is about staying there long enough to realize even this place is alive with the Dharma. And this is your entry place. This is my entry place. It appears like the problem.
Yeah.
And if I get over this problem, I'll really be able to do Zazen. But all the time, it's right here, waiting patiently in whatever form, maybe a very contracted form. But so when you're stuck, be really stuck.
Yeah.
Because you are in exactly the right place.
Well, and the other piece of this, this may not be directly related to what you're saying, Will, so feel free to ignore it, but it's very important to know that all of these opposites are not actually opposites. Form, thusness, right and wrong, of course, but also the different bodies of the Buddha, just this is it and none of it's it. They seem to be like in two hands. And the work of Zen also over the developmental trajectory of a student is that all of this comes together into one thing that covers it all. But the mind doesn't work that way, so it needs to make these categories. And we love categories. And the other thing I keep thinking about is there's a koan in the Gateless Gate where the teacher says, if you have a stick, I'll give you a stick. If you don't have a stick, I'll take it away from you. So, you know, the mind goes, what? That? Come up. And then suddenly it arrives as, oh, right, pretty much what I think you were pointing to, Will. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's the Billie Holiday song that basically is the same koan. Them that's got shall get, them that's not shall lose. So the Bible says, and it still is news, mama may have. Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got its own. And partly that's our teaching. You have your own, already accomplished. But that's why we don't like to call it, what's the word we don't use anymore? I don't know. We don't use it, so it's
so
left my mind.
You know what it is.
Enlightenment. That's the word. But we try to call it awakening, or even better, realization. It's like a, oh, right, kind of feeling, rather than a suddenly you shift completely into some other human being.
you're still you, but you've realized something. Something's dropped away. So the barrier between you and anything else, including the parts of you, it's pretty amazing. So maybe that's enough. Yes, please.
Thanks. So speaking of realization, we were playing with some verses from the Diamond Sutra yesterday afternoon, and there's a moment I love in the Diamond Sutra that speaks to what you said, Will, which is the Buddha asks Subhuti, when I experience, you know, Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, unexcelled complete realization, what did I attain? You know, what did I gain? What did I get? And Subhuti says, absolutely nothing. And the Buddha says, that's right, Subhuti. When I attained complete unexcelled enlightenment, you know, when I experienced complete unexcelled awakening, I attained nothing. And that's why we call it complete unexcelled.
We're done in sutras. All right, thank you all. Let's come back into our sitting posture.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this talk, please consider donating at wisterzen.org/donate.